station ident. You're listening to Radio On, and our guest this evening is Cedric Fermont. And that was a track, I believe, from the CD that comes with the book.
No, I'm wrong.
Sorry. The book,
the name of the band.
Yeah, the band is Beau Mélange, and they published their first album also on CFMI label last year.
Did you see them live? I guess.
No, altogether no. But cool. I played with one of them. Some friends and I collaborated to the organization of the first sort of mini festival of, let's call it experimental music to make it short, in Myanmar, so Burma. 2 years ago, thanks to Natalie Johnson and some of the local artists there, and I performed with one of the members of Beau Mélange also. We made solo parts and a whole improvised live set with, we were, I think, five people. There was a DJ Kavas, also another Burmese musician, Rastko, who is a Serbian composer, was living there, and a few other guys from France also. But all together, no, I never saw them, unfortunately. But next time I go to Myanmar, I hope next year. I wish. It's all new in Myanmar. Some of those guys are active for...
This was a band from Myanmar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some of those guys are active for about 10 years now. But it was... very, very underground, especially before the opening of the regime. And now the situation is much better. But in the past, it was, of course, very restricted. This kind of music was, of course, forbidden. Western music was forbidden anyway. Singing in English was forbidden. And so on and so forth in Myanmar, even though many people never respected that law. But you could end up in jail, and it happened to a few punk and hip hop singers in Myanmar to end up in jail up to 6 years, also for political reasons, of course, because of the lyrics. But now the situation has improved, and so 2 years ago, as I was doing this 6 month tour, I thought, oh shit, I should go there. I'm sure there might be people because I found some punk and metal bands. And then I'm always digging the net and typing keywords. And I was typing, okay, experimental music Myanmar, experimental music Burma. So doesn't work. Experimental music Yangon. Yes. And I found a video.
Yeah.
And I contacted those people and told me, oh yeah, we could do something. And since then, they have organized more events. Dimitri played there, I think a year later, and other people, and some events were more successful than others, but I think it's interesting to see that because it's new, just people come. We made it free, of course. We didn't want it to people to pay for that. I mean,
but that's a political move, conscious sort of move to try and get people to come along and spread the word.
There is this, and I think that everybody should have access to culture, especially when you don't know this culture. You're not certainly not willing to pay for something you've never heard about. And the financial situation of many people in Myanmar is pretty bad, so there was no reason to ask for any money for that. And it's great because many people from the neighborhood came with their children. And the children were dancing on free jazz, on noise. And it was amazing to see that. It was really brilliant. And I was really touched because the mother of DJ Kavas was there. I suspect she's 50 plus. And she's a well-known artist there, and she went to me and congratulated me for the music I made. And I thought, well, that's amazing to be so far away and in kilometers and in and culturally speaking, because this country was completely closed, you know, not as bad as not as badly as North Korea, but still. I was amazed that somebody appreciated what we did, and I got the opportunity to play with Kodu, another musician, but at the French Institute that time, was a traditional musician, but who likes to experiment. And I was also very pleased and surprised that a guy was about 50 years old, told me, "Yeah, I want to experiment with you because I like to play with objects and not only instruments and experiment and so on." In a country that was completely outside of the world until 4 or 5 years ago, you know.
So does the question come from how do you start to make this kind of music? And I guess you can ask this question to everyone in our part of the world, as you can ask it to them. Do they encounter it on YouTube, or is it, well, I've got this gear and let's find out what kind of noises you can make with it?
Well, for many of the young people, definitely it's thanks to the internet, of course, anywhere where this kind of music did not exist. But for some of them, it's mostly, I noticed, people coming from the metal scene and some from the punk scene.
But this older guy, I've got some objects.
Oh, him. Yeah, I don't know. I should have asked him. I don't know. Really, I was really amazed. I have no idea at all why he enjoyed to experiment with objects and not only play straight traditional music. So next time I meet him, I will ask him.
So maybe there's some other questions you can ask. Can I do this one?
Go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
So, I'm reading one of the questions in your book that you went. I mean, one of the chapters is where you have questions for everyone involved, or everyone, for a selection of people involved, and they cover all the countries that are also covered in the book. Then you come to the question, we have stated elsewhere in this book that noise music has originated in Europe and North America. How do you feel about it? Or how do you feel about it? So Goli Kwang from Malaysia says, "Really?" And Natalie Johnson from Myanmar says, "Are you sure about that?" And then comes your colonialist answer. "Yes, we're pretty sure about it." Now, I'm very curious. Did you go on to ask them from why don't you think that's like that? Well, do they have an other opinion about it?
Well, I don't know. But the fact is that I studied and made a lot of research.
And you're not
going to
ruin
music.
My study with your answer.
And before Luigi Russolo in Italy, I cannot find anyone who did noise. I mean, really defining a genre, saying, okay, I'm going to do music with noises from industries and the urban life, basically. Okay, maybe it depends on how you define noise. I don't want to say that there was no music sounding like, no traditional music, most likely, sounding like some noise or something. But it wasn't meant to be noise and to destroy something.
Yeah, you're talking about Luigi now?
No, I mean, if there were people doing something close to noise music in a traditional way in wherever, Southeast Asia, Brittany or whatever. I know in Brittany they had some, I forgot how it's called. So in this part of France, there were people, and there are still some old people playing this very noisy traditional music. With I think it's copper pots, as far as I remember, but whatever. But it's, to me, if you want to give a definition to it, it's a traditional music. It's not noise music. Noise music is a statement.
Oh, yeah, but that's the good thing about your book. It made me think. Luigi Russolo wrote his manifest while he was listening to an orchestra. He was there and listening, and he wrote all these things, which means that listening to music brings you in a mind state that ideas pop up and you come into a flow and you can write it all down. That's one thing in the way of writing. And when I read it, I was still very much linked to making my own recordings. That the thing that he was doing was making recordings without having the possibility to actually make them. So he was describing all the sounds that you could go out and record without actually recording them. I make a small jump to Alfred Dublin, who wrote Berlin Alexanderplatz. And also there, and this is 20s, also there's a way of writing, which is almost automatically writing, that you're on the point of the street or the road, and you write what you see, right? Coming back to Luigi again, if he thinks, while listening to what might be the traditional classical music, if he comes up with that thought, then maybe there must have been a tradition before that composers go out, listen, and translate what they hear into sound.
Yeah, it could be.
This respect, to give another example, a friend of mine, he does something with Tristan and Isolde, the opera by Wagner, and he said, without the lyrics, it's just 4 hours of noise. And symphony orchestras, they can be very, very loud, sorry, I'm still extending this question. So I made another leap, and I thought of composers for symphonies, that one, they were interested in harmonies, the music, but two, they were also interested in the noise, in the pure sound, into a wall of creating a wall of sound. And in effect, if you are looking at the very safe position of the Western noises, they are all very protected by their culture. But they want to be in a niche very far away, but not outside. So that you can be critical and keep everything moving and see through it that things keep interesting.
I don't know.
You don't know what the question is. It might come here.
It was a long time.
It might come here. I dare to state that noise is a continuation of symphonic work. I think there's a direct line, and maybe also if you get Gesualdo, who just broke into Baroque and wasn't understood for 200 years, or the guys who started to rewrite the scripture, the musical scripture, that they were creating noise inside the annotation system. We're going on two legs here. I don't think that Luigi Russolo started something which is noise music, because noise was and understood rumore, lawai, as the undefinable noise that you hear from the street or wherever in industrial zones. So not as music. It was not from I make noise music now. And the other thing is that noise music is more like you described it in the book, as a scene, a genre, a way of life. There's a big leap in your book that you cannot fill.
Yeah,
and that's why I find it a little bit of a pity that you didn't ask to go Lee Kwang and Natalie from. So sorry, yes, but what do you think? You know, as maybe you can do the next time.
Don't joke about that.
We insult our guests. We arenas insult our guests.
No. It's interesting to hear. No, but with Dimitri, we already thought that okay, there will be a second edition because this book is not perfect.
No,
and
but
we
you did a very, very good thing in this respect, that there's already two people. No, I mentioned it to two people. And I said, what is it? Well, it's this. Your chapter, I'm not going to read it for pleasure. But if I'm going to travel to Southeast Asia, I'm going to go through all the pages. Of this is one person, this is one person, and this is one bar. No?
Yeah, sure.
It's a little bit like Lonely Planet, but only... No, but it's like that. People who go there...
A lonely, noisy planet.
People who go there, they've got the names. They've got the names.
Yeah, that sounds great.
I mean, that is...
But then you're into
an immense data collection of information, and you put it all out there for people to use, and I think everybody in the book must be very happy for, yeah, okay, connect. And yeah, in this respect, it's just, book should exist, of course.
How do you expect it to be received? How would you want it, actually, forget that question, how would you want it to be received, or how would you want it to affect people?
I knew that maybe people would be interested in it, but I never thought it would be that successful. And it's just the beginning. I mean, we made a crowdfunding to get some money. The goal was, okay, we should ask $500 in for the crowdfunding in order to be able to have a bit of money to publish it and to offer some copies to some cultural centers over there, for example, who cannot especially afford it, and to also give a copy for each artist and make the compilation, blah, blah, blah. And we didn't know what to think about it. We thought, okay, let's try to get this money in a month. This was our optimism. Mm-hmm. And we got it in a few hours.
Wait.
Incredible. And so there was an enthusiasm. And if I count the copies for the artists and the pre-orders and everything, we shipped about 120 copies now in 10 days or something like this.
Wow.
So I'm spending my life at the post office now. So it's more, way more than what we expected.
The one on Kotpusseldam has less queues.
Oh, interesting.
So that's the most
fast. But I'm living a bit
further. So yellow. So you're like surrounded by yellow most of the day.
Yeah. What I really enjoy is that a lot of people from Asia asked for ordering the book or downloading the PDF, because you can download the PDF version for free. And so there is an interest, and it's nice to see. And some people knew about this, but some were not so well connected. So now they see, okay, there are those guys doing this, that there, and there is this history. Because even between neighbors, then they are not always aware of what's going on there. And for me, it's more than what I expected. This mini success, I would say. Even though I knew it was the first kind of publication in this style, I wrote a few essays before about the whole Asia and parts of Africa and electroacoustic music and so on, but never made such a book before. So I was wondering, okay, is it going to be fine or not, and would everybody agree with what we write, and we make some mistakes and so on. We made a few, definitely, but on an average we've got mostly positive reactions.
Can I just also ask, because it's pretty groundbreaking, giving away the PDF for free, I would say. And that could influence other, you know, like Amazon and loads of other sort of things like that.
Yeah,
bring them down, it'll destroy them. But I mean, to give away the digital version for free, presumably your aim is that people in the countries that you've been to can get the book at an affordable, well, free sort of thing. But that seems amazing, you know.
Yeah,
so
well,
there was no...
for us, it's just normal. The deal was that, first, I didn't want it, the book to be sold on Amazon. I cannot stand
it. No, of course.
And right. Second, we wanted to have the lowest price possible.
Uh-huh.
Hence, the printing quality is not the highest ever.
Yeah.
But that allows us to sell a book for 10 euros.
Wow.
Because I buy a lot of books about music, especially.
Yeah.
And when I cannot find them secondhand, it's always between 20 for the cheapest and 40, 50 euros. And some more
mine
that
was
I cannot.
Cheaper.
No, but nice. Great.
We'll edit that bit.
No,
out.
But it's because I've seen sometimes some books for 80 or 100 euros. And I thought, how do you
justify that?
Yeah, justify that. How do you want to pretend you want to share knowledge if you share it only with an elite, a very small elite?
Yeah.
So we thought, okay, let's make it this price and a free PDF for the people who don't want or cannot buy it and or people who cannot receive it. Because
do they have to fill out a questionnaire? Or
No. Because in some countries, it's hard to ship it because of political reasons.
Mm.
So it's also good that those people anyway will be able to access it
because...
with the internet, you can always
ship it for political reasons.
Well, basically,
the content of your book.
Yeah, of course. In some countries, speaking about the local modern culture is not well seen at all, and especially in one of them in the book. Mm. Yes, of course. In Vietnam, in Vietnam, all my book will be stuck at the customs. And they will charge the artists some money and probably ask some questions, or it will never arrive. And I know that I've tried to post CDs, only CDs, in the past 9 years to Vietnam. They never arrived. I know they go straight to a trash bin most of the time.
Oh.
Because in Vietnam, there is still this fear of the non-local culture, the modern culture, and so on. It's suspicious. So it can be allowed, but not always. It can be restricted and so on. I performed a few times there, but you know that the police is there, and the police is watching you.
Mm.
So
have you ever been in trouble with the local sort of constabulary at all?
No. Luckily. Once in Vietnam, because of a video, a VJ was screening some images when I was performing.
Mm-hmm.
I did not see them because it was in my back. But for the few extracts I saw, it looked like some people demonstrating or something. But not in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And the police went straight to the organizer of the festival and told him it's over.
Yeah.
It was the first day of the 3 days festival.
Mm.
And he had to negotiate with them during an hour or something to be allowed to go on. It's a bit complicated there. And in Myanmar, I must say that I took the risk because a friend of mine from Kuala Lumpur, who is a performer, was sent back straight. He wanted to do a performance, and him and a few other ones. And they've been arrested and sent back to the airport and deported with a stamp, deported in the passport 1 year before I came to Myanmar. And I thought, yeah, but it's going to be more and more open, and let's try it anyway.
Mm.
I have to lose nothing. I must admit that I'm in an easy position because I'm not a local. I'm a Westerner from the EU.
Mm.
So in the worst case, they kick me out, maybe forever. That's it. So I don't say that it's completely impossible to not end up in jail in some places, but there are a few chances. So I took the risk, and it was okay. The police came. They were really fine. They just told us, okay, you can't play later than 10 p.m. And not so loud, please. And so I was surprised because I knew that we didn't get any license to do those performances and so on in Yangon. But
Before we play the next track, I wanted to ask, how has releasing the book changed your life?
I didn't sleep a lot before. I slept less now.
less.
Yeah, because, I'm invited for radio interviews. No, because many people write me for ordering the book or for questions or for inviting me to give talks. And also it's stressful for me because I've always ideas in mind, and I want to compose, but I want to go in this place. Yeah, I've never been there. I should give a try. Yeah, I discovered this guy, and some people are inviting me, telling me, yeah, but you should come and present your book there, and you've never been in this country. And so I'm just spending my days and nights on the internet thinking, hey, how can I reach that place? What do I need? And so on. How much money? And so on. And then I need to finish some other jobs. I mean, I'm playing concerts and so on. But I mean, it's nice. It's to me, it's unexpected. But I'm super happy because in the past few months, I often thought of myself when I was a teenager, starting to do noise and industrial music in the 80s, and expecting to, you know, publish a vinyl one day or something and play some gigs like in Belgium, Germany. And then I never even thought that I would play in those places and write a book and discover all this. It's a bit strange to me. It's a kind of a, I don't know, the gap is so big between that time and now that sometimes I'm a bit lost when I think about it, because it's more than any goals I would have expected. So it's all positive, I think.
So the next track.
Yeah, okay. So next track, we are going to play. We need to switch to another country than Indonesia, I think, even though it's tempting. We are going to play a track by Tengal, who is a composer and organizer from Manila in the Philippines, really involved a lot in the local scene for promoting noise music, experimental music, electronic music, organizing a festival called Fête de la Wasak. So it's written Fête, like in French, F-E-T-E, de la in one word, D-E-L-A, and then Wasak is W-S-K. And they published two compilations until now, and the first one was a while ago, I think it's 2006, if I'm not mistaken, with a local artist. And I'm going to play a piece by Tengal, so called a piece of work in two parts, and where we are going to play an extract of it because it's pretty long. Thank you.
this evening, Cédric Fermont. Cédric, what was that track?
It was a Tengal, a composer from Manila, the Philippines, who is also, like I said, a concert and event organizer. He also curates some radio shows and a festival called Fête de la Wasak and so on and so forth.
I was going to say I had another question in mind just before you were about to play that track, and it was as you've been talking about your adventures. Can I say adventures?
Yeah, maybe that's not as you wish.
I don't know. In Southeast Asia, and it's and the book that you brought that you've co-written, Not Your World Music. That actually brings up another question altogether as well. So I'll just note that down for after this one. I can imagine it as a film. Someone that's kind of like, first of all, there's this person who's doing loads of night
Michael Palin
doing loads of night research, you know, and then desperately he wants to connect with different artists and sort of people around the world, and then goes actually does it, and over 15 years this kind of, it would either be a documentary or some kind of fictional sort of thing, you know. Can you see, do you ever see yourself as like a film character? It's a huge sort of journey that you've gone on, and now you've co-written a book about that journey as well, and it's just immense, you know. And it's never been, to my mind, and it does say on the book as well that it's the first book of that kind, the first journey of that kind into this kind of music and politics and everything else, you know, that connects with it. So it's bringing people together.
Yeah, I hope so.
But it could be you wouldn't want it to be a Hollywood film, would you?
No, I don't. Not really. I don't think so.
An independent film.
Yeah, but making documentaries would be interesting. And if everything works fine, in November this year, when I will be in Indonesia, I should make a documentary about women in underground scenes in Indonesia. Yeah. So not only noise, it's punk, it's rock, it can be hip hop or electronica and so on. We want to show that there are also women active, and more women active over there. We are not the first ones. There is already a film about women in the punk scene in Java that was published this year. In fact,
do you know the title of the film?
I speak about it in the book. Let me. This is also our scene in English, but in Indonesian I don't remember how it is. But you can easily find it on the trailer on YouTube, and you can order it straight to the filmmaker. She lives in Indonesia, in Java.
So it would be, what would you type in on YouTube, like Indonesian
this women? Is also our scene, Indonesian female punk, something like this. I'm sure you would find it pretty easily.
Great.
But yeah, many people ask me in the past few years they told me I should document, I should film when I go in those places, because I've been also in many countries where very people go, even not only for music, but I got the opportunity to play in Algeria, for example, and not so many people go to Algeria, even for tourism, or to Bangladesh, for example. But I'm not a filmmaker. I don't have any enough money to make it right now. It would be nice to do it with other people, of course. There was a project that has been aborted, unfortunately, 7 years ago, I think. Somebody invited me to do a project with them. We would have been three people involved to make a documentary step by step in Asia, maybe in Africa as well. Unfortunately, the main filmmaker passed away. So the project was cancelled or standby. I don't know, because I'm still in touch with the other filmmaker who lives also in Berlin. So it's not impossible that one day we would make a film, but I would like a documentary about the scene, not about me traveling over there.
It could be good, though. I would watch it. I would definitely watch it. I download it for free. One other thing is the title of the book is Not Your World Music. And do you think, I was thinking, wow, that's quite negative, putting a not in the title of a book. How many other titles did you come up with before? Not exactly how many, quantifying it, but...
I'm pretty bad at finding titles, even for tracks. And so when my friends with whom I collaborate find something, usually I'm a pretty easy person. But I liked, I think Dimitri, I think it's the first title he gave. Maybe wrong, but I think so. But Dimitri had a bright idea, I think. And it comes out that when people hear that I publish music from many African and Asian musicians, they often ask me, "Oh, yeah, what kind of traditional music?"
Yeah.
I think, what are you talking about? Yeah, I heard you are publishing music from Africa, right? Yeah, and yeah, what kind of traditional music? Say, you know, I'm publishing electronica and noise and industrial and so on. Oh, does that exist there, really? But are there really local people? You know, it's really frustrating to hear that.
Yeah.
So this is why Dimitri came with this idea, like, not your world music, because when you speak about Asia, first for people it's the Far East, but Asia, it starts with half of Istanbul, more or less, and even a big part of Russia and so on. And then they don't imagine that people use computers there. They have internet access, they have maybe synthesizers, or even without synth you can do experimental music. I find it terrible, especially nowadays when you can access almost anything on the internet. So you can check. And the first time I was in China was 11 years ago, and I brought back a lot of music from my big travel in Asia back then, and especially from China, and pictures. And when many of my friends saw the pictures, they told me, "Oh, wow, this is so modern." And then they saw Kuala Lumpur. "Oh, wow, wow, we never thought it was like this there."
Yeah.
I told them, "But come on, guys, you've got internet, no? Or, I don't know, at least Wikipedia or something."
Yeah.
Sorry, but... And it's the same with Beirut. When first many of my friends at the beginning, it's been, I think, 6 or 7 years that I go there once or twice per year. At the beginning, many of my friends would tell me, "No, don't go there. They would kill you. It's war and it's full of extremists, and with your outfit and your mohawk and so on. And nothing ever happened to me." And then they saw the pictures and so on. "Oh, well, yeah, but it's really modern. Eh? It's a bit like it's like the US or something." But some of them, it's like a desert with camels, and it's really a pity.
You understand where it comes from, don't you? If you don't. I mean, even if we're just talking about social networking or something, if you don't type in the question, you don't get the answer, do you? So, but you know, don't you? I mean,
yeah,
it's very, very small worlds, aren't they, that we live in somehow. Crazy. I know, I mean, just when I was a kid, I remember thinking like, oh, abroad, oh, wow, that's a, you know, that's a dark sort of silhouette land out there.
Yeah.
And my parents weren't even English, you know, desperately wanted to leave the country even somehow from when I was a kid, but I still had this kind of like weird impression.
Yeah, but you were a kid. That's but you know, when people were 40, 50 years old are telling me, "Yeah, that's not possible. You will never find anyone there. And come on, it's really primitive and they have nothing, blah, blah, blah." But come on, seriously. You can find almost all kind of music almost everywhere on Earth now. I mean, with the exception of North Korea, even though I found some electronic music in North Korea, but that's another story.
that's another story, and that kind of brings us to the closing, to our closing sort of
you are part closing,
of the program.
I am closing. We are closing.
We are all closing. We're closing the book. This is the last page on the book. Thank you very much, Cedric.
Yeah, but wait.
He always does this. He always does this.
No, but because we I think I'm not the only one, and there's more people. It's also even mentioned a little bit in your book by, I think, by One Man Nation, who calls himself now
Tara Transitory.
Something about the end of noise music or being fed up with the scene. Do you see there are holes in the tissue now that people are creeping out of this nominator and sliding into something new that maybe has not yet a name?
Not yet a name, I don't know, because pretty often when I hear something, I think, oh, yeah, I heard that somehow, somewhere, one day. But, yeah, I see noise musicians being a bit fed up with the scene or the fact that, okay, they've been doing noise during 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and I think, yeah, maybe I should do something else now and experiment with something different or blending noise with something. I see, more and more often. And I see some noise musicians complaining about the fact that noise became, in a way, established in some places. I mean, you can hear noise in museums, for example. So they want to keep a distance because if it's getting institutionalized, in a way, or it will never be completely, I think. It's problematic for some of them, and they want to create something new to break the rules. Because in the end, when you think about it, this noise scene exists since the 1970s, late 70s. And so I think we've experimented almost everything with the noise. it's time maybe to go a bit further or to not be afraid to break some rules, because it became a standard. The noise and with subgenres like the Japanese scene and the power electronics and so on, but sometimes it's a bit of a cliche, and yeah, some people are a bit fed up and they want to switch to something else, and I understand it, but for some people it's new as well.
The thing is, do you encounter something that you think from, whoa, this goes beyond, or this goes somewhere what haven't encountered yet? Or
with some musicians, yes, I would go back to Senyawa from Indonesia, for example, which is not properly noise, but it's related to noise music, and they went kind of further because they are not playing world music, even though they play with somehow traditional instruments and pedals. They go further. They are breaking tons of rules, the rules of traditional music, the rules of using a traditional instrument, because basically they make their own instruments, so it's not really a purely traditional instrument, but using modern technology to filter those instruments and singing with a lot of power, like a grindcore band together with a traditional band. And so to me, they went further than many other noise bands that are just repeating themselves and the cliches of noise music. But I think I think it's a beginning. I don't think that it's not a majority of people doing this right now. And you see also people blending punk music with noise because punk is not enough anymore, but they want to create something different. It's the case of To Die, this project by Indra Menus. He blends everything. You can hear a track which is harsh noise with a kind of jazz saxophone, then a track which is a hardcore, grindcore track with patches of noise here and there. Another one is more power electronics, maybe. Another one is more drone ambient. He doesn't stick to one rule. He wants to experiment and to mix the genres and the scenes as well. He's not afraid to gather people to organize something. And yeah, there is a punk band, there is a noise band, and there is an electronica project.
If we bring it back to the beginning, would you state that there's a need? Need is always difficult to say this, but it does good to a country, or it does good to a local scene, that the energy of noise music and the noise scene is injected into general life there.
I cannot really answer this question. It's difficult. It's pretty tricky.
It's a very Catholic question. You should be a little bit used to it. Goes back to your youth.
No, to me, it's interesting to see that people are trying to innovate and break the rules, and and develop their own ways of lives and styles and genders and so on over there, especially when a society is very traditional. I think it pushes boundaries and maybe pushes in a way the art scene and perhaps the society to accept more differences. Because let's face it, many countries in Southeast Asia are pretty conservative. Even when you think about Thailand, many people think about tourism and open-mindedness and so on, but still, it's a very conservative country. And I think people in Thailand who play noise, and they are not a lot at all like in Indonesia, are really brave, because you kind of exclude yourself or partly exclude yourself from the society, because the Thai society is a very traditional society in the sense of how people should behave and be polite and so on and so forth, and how they should show respect and so on. But even though Thailand has digested many Western influences in the fashion or in the popular music, I mean really mainstream R&B and so on, regarding extreme music, it's very different, especially in a country which is extremely capitalist. Knowing that if you do noise, you will never become a superstar or rich. And appearance and money are very important in some of those places. Mm. And in Thailand, this is what I noticed. And I think it's braveness. And I think it's important then that some people do that in a society that is not maybe ready to accept this kind of extreme music, let's call it like this. And maybe not ban it, maybe not... I don't see Thailand, for example, forbidding noise music. It's just that people would have no interest in it and not go to the gigs, simply, or just tell the guy, but just get a job, you know? Mm. And I know it can be pretty difficult over there, not only in Thailand, of course, but... So I think it's important in a place like Vietnam or Myanmar. I think it is as well, especially in Vietnam, where... The government is still very suspicious when something comes from the outside. It's not only coming from the West. Coming from China is not really well accepted neither. Mm. There is always this tension between Vietnam and China. So the local artists who are breaking the rules and making their own noise music or electroacoustic music or improvised music are challenging the society, which is also pretty conservative in Vietnam. And I think, in a way, they're asking questions. Hmm? Are you ready to accept this or not now? And if you are not ready to accept that, anyway, I'm going to go further, even if you want to forbid it. And in Vietnam, you know that it could be forbidden, even though the situation has improved in the past decade. It's pretty amazing now, but it's still uneasy, and especially in a country which is... Where people are not especially rich, you know, when you want to tell your parents, "Yeah, I'm going to study electroacoustic music," and it's all my life, it can be pretty difficult. I mean, even here, but especially in those places where the first need are maybe not, I mean, for the average human, not experimenting with sound.
Would you, the final question, I think, you live in Berlin. If you could choose any of the countries out there, would you move there, or why live in Berlin?
Well, yeah, I it's been many years. I think, I mean, I feel good in Berlin. I have no reasons to leave Berlin right now. Mm. And for me, it's an interesting spot, because many people come here to live or to just cross. Somehow it's part of gentrification. That's true as well, but it's another story. Mm. But you meet tons of people from everywhere here. Yeah. Once I made a project for Neukölln, and it was about the fact that more than 160 different nationalities coexist in Neukölln, for example.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty amazing. And so you meet different artists, different people from different cultures and yeah. countries and so on. This is why I stay here. And also you get a lot of opportunities. Mm. I mean, I lived in the Netherlands and in Belgium, but in some towns mostly. I lived a bit in Brussels, but mostly I lived in towns. And it's not that easy, because for organizing concerts or events, you don't get the fundings or no audience and no interest and so on. And because you don't cross the path of other artists and so on. And here it's a wonderful platform, I would say. And it's pretty easy to move from Berlin to many other European places or else. But if I had to leave, I'm thinking about that for many years. And I still don't know. I'm kind of hooked to China and to Taiwan, but for different reasons, because they are really two different places, very different places. But if it was only for the scene, I would choose China, I think, because it's a bigger scene, bigger country, and there are more things to do there. In Taiwan, it's more local, I would say, especially in Taipei. Mm. But there is something in Taiwan that attracts me as well. So maybe it will happen one day or another, but I can't tell. Until now, I'm good here, so I've got no reasons. But I'm always in between something anyway, because I'm up to 4, 5, 6 months on the road. So, yeah, I'm partly living here.
Noise in Southeast Berlin? No yeah. idea?
Yeah, There is noise everywhere.
That should be the name of this program, I think. There's noise everywhere. Mm. Cedric Fermont, thank you very much for coming in today, talking about your new book that you've co-written, Not Your World Music. Where can we find the book? Where can I purchase it?
Yeah, you can check online or my website, syrphe.com. And then you will find a link where to get the PDF or the book, and you can order it online, or if you live in Berlin, we can meet. And
I'm definitely going to get it.
All right.
It's just brilliant. And I'll download the PDF at the same time as well. But the PDF doesn't come with a CD, does it? Presumably the book.
No, there is a digital version of the CD, but not for free, that one. that you can hear on Bandcamp, in fact, on also the
syrphe,
syrphe, the name of the label, .bandcamp.com. There you can listen to all the productions, and all productions are also downloadable for free, and among them there are two compilations. Among them there is one with 20 artists from about 22 countries in Asia and Africa.
Yeah.
And that one is for free. It's a very old CD.
There you go. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you too.
It's been fascinating.
And of course, lots of success for you and yes. Dimitri with the book. Yes.
Thank
and
you.
Everyone in Southeast Asia.
Okay, thank you for listening to Radio On, and continue on listening to the next programme.